WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and here's a catch-22. Perhaps you wanted to read up on the situation in Syria and the pros and cons of U.S. intervention in that country's civil war. One good place to start, the New York Times, but thanks to a Syrian group, you did not have that chance yesterday because the New York Times website was down for much of the afternoon. Taking credit for the attack on the Times and smaller attacks on the Huffington Post, Twitter, and some other sites was the Syrian Electronic Army. The SEA is a mysterious pro-Assad organization that may or may not have formal ties to his regime. But either way, by blocking access to some of the most high-profile websites in the world, they have added a new element to our conversation about what to do in Syria. Nicole Perlroth covers technology for the New York Times. When you were able to get back on their site, it was probably her piece that you read, or if you picked up the paper copy of the Times, it was right there on B1 this morning. Nicole, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
All right. First, some very basic questions about the attack itself, and then we'll talk about this mysterious Syrian electronic army. But before all of that, let me ask you what this was like for you and your staffers at the Times. When did you, or your colleagues at the Times, when did you realize that the website was down and how did you react?
I had just been working and I immediately someone came over to me and said, hey, by the way, we've been hacked. Don't send out any sensitive emails. And my immediate thought was China because I had covered a Chinese cyber attack on the New York Times several months ago. But it was my old friends, the Syrian Electronic Army, who I'd been covering for the last couple of months, the last time around that they had been hacking a couple of media outlets back in May. So I was surprised to hear their names pop up again because they had really kind of fallen off the radar in the last couple of months.
Well, the New York Times could put these things on its resume. Hacked by China, hacked by the Syrian Electronic Army. These are badges of honor. Am I correct in saying that the attack wasn't exactly on the New York Times, but on a company that helps people get access to the Times? The Times site itself was never actually down?
Right. The Times site was never actually, we were not hacked, per se. The attackers were unable to sort of penetrate the Times defenses. What they did do was they went upstream, so to speak, and went after the internet infrastructure to redirect traffic away from our site to their own domains. And they did that by going after one of the DNS registrars that we and Twitter and the Huffington Post and others are signed up with, Melbourne IT, which is actually has a very secure reputation. So it is very troubling that they were able to hack Melbourne IT and redirect traffic
away. And so what that means, the DNS means it's a domain name service, DNS. And so if people entered nytimes.com, they wouldn't get to your site. But if they mention the actual IP address, which, of course, nobody knows, 170.149.168.130, they would have actually gotten to the site.
That's right. You can think of the DNS system like a switchboard for the internet. So they basically did a hack which screwed with the switchboard system so that anyone without that IP address couldn't make it to our site.
So they couldn't have changed the content of your articles or hacked your email and things like that, as far as you know?
As far as I know.
And how does a company like The Times work to restore access once an attack like that happens? Because presumably, once the hackers have changed the DNS, they've also made it hard to change it back, right?
Well, ideally, you call up your registrar or you call up VeriSign, which is the ultimate arbiter of who goes where for us, and you ask them to hit a button and say, you know, switch traffic back from this domain back to the New York Times. And unfortunately, in this case, the first thing that happened was they locked traffic to the site. So, and unfortunately, it was locked onto the SEA's domain. So it took a little bit of time to get that sorted out. But ideally, what you would do in this situation is just sort of hit a button that redirects all this sort of switchboarding function away from Melbourne IT to a different service that could then redirect traffic correctly back to the New York Times site.
Now, listeners, if you have anything to say or ask about this hack attack on the New York Times or anything related, Nicole Perlroth, who covers technology for The Times, is here, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Is it all back as far as you know? I'll say that I could not get on The Times app this morning through my iPad while I was able to get on other apps as usual. I don't know if that's related to the attack or not.
It probably is. A lot of this is cached, and it takes about 24 hours for everything to resume normally. So hopefully, you know, give me a call and let me know if that's still the case in a couple hours. But I will say the most heartening thing about this anytime it happens is that I hear from, you know, distant family members and people who are very upset that they can't reach the New York Times, which is always heartening.
Ooh, personal technical support from Nicole Perlroth. I may take you up on it. How difficult an attack is this to stage? How sophisticated do they have to be to do what they did to you?
I have to say that I was very surprised by the sophistication in this case. When I last covered the Syrian Electronic Army back in May, this is when they had hacked Twitter accounts for the Associated Press, Financial Times, and others. Those attacks were fairly simple. They were sending employees at those organizations emails containing links that then redirected employees at those organizations to a fake login page where they were asked to enter their username and password, and then the SEA was taking that password, getting into their emails, and sending out more emails to other employees that might have access to those companies' Twitter accounts. And then they were taking over the Twitter accounts and posting whatever they wanted. But that was fairly simple. In this case, they went upstream, and the fact that they were able to hack what we think of as a very secure registrar, Melbourne IT, is very worrisome. It also shows that these guys haven't been sitting around for the last couple of months twiddling their thumbs. They're definitely upping their capabilities. So it is fairly troubling.
And when we talk about hackers, what do you imagine that looks like in a case like this? Is it a few people in their apartments, in their pajamas, on normal laptops, if they want to be, or are there more sophisticated computers and systems needed to pull off something like this?
I don't know, and I wouldn't want to speculate, but I do think that this is probably, unfortunately, something that someone in their pajamas in their basement could pull off. Do I know that these guys are wearing pajamas in their basements in Syria? I have no idea. We're still not 100% sure, and we won't be until we do further forensics, that this was the SEA, but it certainly had their fingerprint, and it's, you know, they were redirecting traffic back to their own server, so you can be fairly confident that it was them, or as our CIO put it, someone who looks a lot like them.
But you think they're in Syria?
I do think they're in Syria. About, I guess it was last May, I wrote a story on who these guys were exactly. And the security researchers who had been tracking them were very confident that they were based inside Syria. There were some attacks that routed back to a server in Russia, so there had been some speculation that maybe this wasn't a group of Syrian hackers, maybe someone in Russia was involved, but actually I think it looked as if they had just used a compromised server in Russia to redirect attack traffic from inside Syria. The bigger question is, how closely tied are these guys to the Syrian government? They're obviously pro-Assad. They've said that they've hacked media companies because they want to put out a counter-narrative to news emerging from the Syrian civil war. Unfortunately, some of them have Facebook friended me, and I was scared to deny their request. So a lot of my Facebook feed these days is pro-Assad screeds in Arabic. If I'm bored, I'll go and translate. But it's unclear how closely tied they are to the government. And when they first started out, there were some connection. Assad himself referred to the SEA, I think, as a virtual army. Sort of, he was referring to them as Syria's own virtual army. There have been some digital crumbs along the way that suggest that maybe there were some ties. At one point, the attack traffic was coming from Syriatel, which is owned by, I believe it's Assad's cousin. There's also, there had been these various sort of forensic hints along the way, but some of the security researchers that I've spoken with have said that these guys are fairly disorganized. They would be surprised if this was a state-sponsored effort, and it's very tricky to kind of tie down who these people are exactly.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Nicole Perlroth, who covers technology for the New York Times, talking about the Syrian Electronic Army hack attack, which still has Times online service down for some people, apparently. Right, Richard, in Manhattan?
I can't log on. I haven't been able to log on for 2 days, and I really miss it.
Have you paid your paywall bill?
Oh, now you're going to make me confess. That's not the way I log on.
Okay, all right. But for 2 days? Really, 2 days? Like, because I think this...
Yesterday and today.
Yesterday.
And I just tried now to log on.
Yes.
Even though with the paywall, I should at least be able to get the front page. I can't even get the front page.
Richard, thank you very much. David in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon, or still good morning. I subscribe to the Times. I pay every month. They have my billing information, my bank account information and everything, because they deduct how vulnerable, how compromised might that information be.
Nicole, any risk to David regarding his information?
No risk, David. This, again, was not a situation where the New York Times was hacked. It was a situation, and I want to make very clear that attackers were not able to get into our systems. This was a situation where the attackers hacked the registrar that we trust to direct traffic to NewYorkTimes.com. So that was the service that was compromised. The New York Times was not compromised, and all your credit card data and your login information, your password is still safe.
Mr. Cam in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I was just wondering here, since the Huffington Post has left the center and the New York Times has left the center, I tried to get the front line on PBS, and I couldn't do it because that circle slowed down all the time and it just wouldn't work. But the other features, the non-political aspects of PBS, seemed to work okay. So I was going to call them, but they wanted me to email, and I was going to tell them maybe it was a colleague of Snowden's who was in there hacking PBS. But given all of the incentive on the right to hack and to warrantless wiretap and around the rule of law, maybe this is the Syrian group, maybe it's some other right-wing Republican group. I'd just like a comment on that.
All right. Thank you. Now, I don't know that Frontline, I haven't seen anything that says Frontline was part of this apparent Syrian Electronic Army hack attack, which hit primarily the New York Times, also to lesser degrees Huffington Post and Twitter. Had you heard Frontline mentioned or anything on PBS in connection with this, Nicole?
I hadn't. No, sorry. It is an interesting conspiracy theory, though, especially with everything in the news these days.
And is there anything, he put it in left-right terms. They chose the Times, I'm guessing it's just because the Times is big and influential, It's certainly not pro-Assad, and I don't know if that fits into a left-right American paradigm. But Huffington Post, you know, certainly the Times has a liberal editorial page. Huffington Post is a liberal news site. You know, I don't know. Is, you know, they could have hacked the Murdoch paper.
Right, they could have. I don't think they're very discriminate. They hacked the Onion. They hacked the Onion a few months back. So I think I'm not quite sure which end of the political spectrum these guys fall on.
All right. David in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
Okay.
So one of the questions I had is a couple what ifs, but, you know, the question you rose earlier about, you know, how connected they are with the Syrian government. If they are, in fact, connected with the Syrian government, do we view the World Wide Web as an open thing, or the fact that they were going to the New York Times, do we view that as a specific attack, even though it be a cyber attack, against the United States?
Nicole,
and
how
do we have to react to that?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting
question. It's a really interesting question, and it's something I've been thinking about a lot over the last year, not just with this case, but with a number of other cases, such as when the New York Times was hacked by actors inside China. And more recently, there's been a slew of cyber attacks on U.S. banks that U.S. officials claim are coming from Iran. So we are operating in a very fuzzy world these days, where a lot of the cyber attacks on U.S. soil are hitting the private sector. And the private sector is really left to deal with this. And in no case do I think this is more interesting than the denial of service attacks that have been hitting dozens of U.S. banks over the last year. Actors have said that they are hitting U.S. banks. They claim for that anti-Islamic YouTube video that was put online, although Joe Lieberman and others say they're hitting the U.S. banks in retaliation for sanctions on Iran. So we are in a very interesting world these days, where actors can retaliate on the U.S. by going after the private sector.
So let me end with a silly question. How does the Syrian Electronic Army have a Twitter account? You know, I noticed they were posting on Twitter yesterday, taking credit, and I know other hacking groups like Anonymous have Twitter accounts. Are they just signing up the same way that I did when I registered at Brian Lehrer? Is there no way to track them down through that?
They are signing up the way anyone signs up with, I believe, with an email address and possibly a phone number. So if you have an email address and a phone number, you can get a Twitter account. Twitter, unlike Facebook, accounts on Twitter are really not tied to anyone's identity, whereas Facebook is. So, you know, anyone can sign up, and that includes hackers out there.
And in 10 seconds, is it a traceable thing if, you know, the intelligence services or anybody is looking to track down the people involved?
I've gotten to a point now, Brian, where I think anything is traceable on the Internet. So I'm going to go with yes on that one.
The NSA may be monitoring this radio show. Who knows? So Nicole Perlroth,
probably.
We hope they are. Nicole Perlroth covers technology for The New York Times. I hope the site is fully back up soon.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.